This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. In 1979, American feminist writer Kate Millett traveled to Iran with recording equipment in hand to be part of a transformative moment in that country. It was just after the overthrow of Iran's monarch, Mohammad Reza. The women who had been instrumental in that overthrow were now in the streets asserting their place in the political future of their home. Those are some of the sights and sounds of a changing nation that had come to life, and they do come to life in whisper tapes, Kate Millett in Iran. It's a new book from Duke Professor of Literature and Media Studies, Nigar Motahedeh. Nigar, welcome to The State of Things. Good to have you here.
Oh, it's an incredible pleasure. Thank you.
Tell us more about Kate Millett. We're going to have to know a little bit about her to know more about your book and the recording equipment she brought to Iran.
So Kate Millett was a feminist in the 1970s. She was her dissertation, her PhD dissertation, was the first feminist dissertation, Sexual Politics, was written at Columbia University and then turned into a book in 1970. It hit the newsstands and it was an instant success. It was known as the Das Kapital of the feminist movement, and she was known as the Mao Zedong of the feminist movement, the supreme leader, essentially, of the feminist movement. She was the face of liberation feminism in the 1970s.
So talk about this moment in Iran, because that becomes the centerpiece of your book. The Iranian Revolution, 1979, the Shah is overthrown, people are in the streets, including women, and Kate Millett sees this as her moment. She goes to Iran.
Yeah, well, Kate Millett was invited to Iran to participate in the celebration of the first International Women's Day in 1979. Now, Women's Day had been celebrated before under the Shah. The celebration was the anti-veiling law that had been passed under his father. And so Women's Day was celebrated in January. Now, this was March, and this was International Women's Day, and Iranian women decided to join other women around the world to celebrate International Women's Day, and they invited Kate Millett, amongst other feminists from all around the world, to join. She was the only one who showed up. And she showed up with a 16-millimeter camera, with two cassette tapes, two still cameras, and a ton of batteries and tapes.
And ready to go. Mm-hmm. Where is the revolution in this moment?
So the revolution has just succeeded. And the leader of the revolution, who was merely a voice of opposition, had just returned from exile. This was Ayatollah Khomeini, who we later know as the supreme leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This was not clear at the time that he was going to lead the country into a new government. And
so now this is the moment where the Shah has been overthrown. He has been seen as the puppet of the West, certainly of the United States, who helped install his family in the leadership role. That's a happy moment. And as you say, not clear what comes next. Women are participating in this movement. And Kate Millett sees this as her moment to record all of this.
Exactly. I mean, as I listen to the tapes, she says that, you know, when we were starting the women's movement in the United States, we were so busy doing that we didn't record that moment. And imagine what it would be like, she says, to have a record of the first 19th century feminists. And this was the moment that she wanted to capture in Iran.
But you point out that in many ways she was naive, and as most Americans are, very sort of American-centric and not quite fully understanding the culture that she was now trying to record.
Well, she was focused on... her focus was elsewhere, in a sense. I mean, as much as she was there with the Iranian women in solidarity, body and soul and spirit, she was also very conscious of the state that patriarchy was the overruling sort of condition of the world, and that women as second-class citizens in the context of patriarchy needed to stick together. So she wanted to be the leader of a global sisterhood, and she saw this as an opportunity in the middle of all sorts of third world liberation movements to become, to stand in the forefront of this coming together of women around the world.
How was she perceived by Iranian women who had been organizing before she got there?
Well, they welcomed her, obviously. They wanted her to bring greetings from all the feminists from the world. what wasn't anticipated was that the celebration of International Women's Day would actually turn into 10 days of protest. And that's the story that complicates matters quite a bit.
Well, and talk more about that protest and the fact that, as I suggested, but as you point out in more detail in the book, Iranian women had already been organizing and preparing for that.
Absolutely. I mean, women and men were together in the overthrow of the Pahlavi regime in Iran. And what their vision was on freedom for all, regardless. I mean, it wasn't just about Iran. It was truly an overthrow of all compulsion in the world. This was their vision. It was a planetary vision. And in fact, the chants that we heard at the beginning of the recording are about that. Freedom is neither Eastern nor Western. It is planetary. So this was their vision. And in the midst of the revolution, they had also been organizing as women. What are our rights as women? And it wasn't just the middle class that was organizing. Women, veiled and unveiled, educated and uneducated, nurses, school teachers, high school students. This is the most amazing part of it, is that high school students were the vanguard here, leading women workers and teachers, their teachers, onto the streets in revolt.
Well, to what extent? Because the paradox here is that under the Shah's regime, Iran did develop a kind of middle class and opened the way for this kind of thinking and perhaps an opening for this sort of protest, which we didn't see in other countries where there were this modern, we'll call it a modernization, though I actually chafe at the word. But this change that allowed for a middle class, but paradoxically doesn't allow for the full liberation of all the people who are living there.
I think this is, I think you're correct about modernization process, because the plan to modernize Iran, which was called the White Revolution under the Shah, was actually cracked and by the United States government. So he was actually following an agricultural and industrialization plan that was envisioned in the United States and delivered as a map for Iran's evolution.
Right. And again, it doesn't allow for the Iranian people themselves to develop their own sense of modernization. What would that look like if growing out of Iranian culture, which to some extent, as we look at your book, seems to be perhaps a critique of Kate Millett not fully understanding or participating in the local culture, being absolutely mesmerized by an international movement, tantalized by it, but perhaps failing to see the need to understand the local culture a little better.
Yeah, I think that there are a couple of things going on. First of all, a misunderstanding, perhaps, that the freedom that was sought was not on behalf of women only. It was a freedom for all, and it was an international consciousness. I mean, she wasn't the only foreigner that was in Iran at the time. Bertrand Russell's secretary, he had an international tribunal. He was in Iran at the time. There were, his name is Ralph Schoenemann. The philosopher Foucault was in Iran at the time of the revolution. The interest here was really seeing Iran as maybe the center of an international federation, a new way of thinking the globe with Iran as the center of this. So this was the hope of the revolution, and also the hope of the women in part.
Centerpiece of your book, of course, is these tapes that she collected. Tell us what we learned from listening to them and what you gleaned by listening.
Okay, so Kate Millett used the tapes. I listened to 90 hours of tape that she recorded during the 10-day protests of the women, and some tapes that she recorded afterwards in book readings and interviews. Now, in the tapes, these tapes were used by Kate Millett to write her book, Going to Iran. And how I listen to the tapes is to listen to the background, to the voices in the background, and recover the contingent context of the Iranian revolution, what is going on right now on the ground, the debates, the discussions, etc. What's key here is that Khomeini, 3 days before the International Women's Day, made a decree that all women working in the Iranian ministries had to veil. And so when women went to work the next day, they were told to go home and get their veils. As they were coming together on the streets, they were met by men, supporters of Khomeini, who insisted that they should either veil or they'll be smacked in the head. So there was violence. And in this, this is where the protests started. They joined other workers, students, and they walked towards the university. And that's when university students also converged, and 10 days of revolts began at that time.
Yeah, I mean, that is a subject for a whole other program, and we should talk more deeply about that, the expectations, the failure of the United States to understand fully what was going on, to understand the complexity of that revolution in that moment and afterward. But at least you've shed, I think, a brilliant light on a particular moment, and we thank you for it. Negar Motahedeh is the author of Whisper Tapes, Kate Millett in Iran. Negar is a professor of literature and media studies at Duke University. Thank you so much.
Thank you.